The Feel Better Station for Warrington Hospital.
This is Radio General.
Now, the final hooter.
I'll tell you what, Parky, over the years, there's been some real characters playing rugby league, hasn't there?
Oh, there certainly has, yeah. I mean, I remember Tim Street, and I remember guys like that, really hard guys playing rugby league.
Yeah, and obviously a lot of them have coined that phrase, cult heroes, cult terrace heroes.
They have, yeah.
And we're going to be speaking to our lad, and it's fair to say he is one of those cult terrace heroes. Let's say hello to Barry McDermott.
Hello, gents. How are we doing?
We're good, Barry. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. And nice to mention people like Streety and Kelvin Skerritt, and, you know, there's been a resurgence of players with the reputation of Kevin Ward and those old-type rugby heroes. So, yeah, Streety was a guy I played with at Oldham, and, yeah, could cause a fight in an empty room, could you see, unless Mrs. was there, then he was quiet as a mouse.
Is it fair to say you're a cult terrace hero?
Do you know what, gents? I loved playing rugby, and people ask you about retirement, and they said, do you miss playing rugby? And I say, yeah, I do, because I loved it. I really enjoyed it. And I reckon I played 400 around about that professional game, and probably as many as that, if not a bit more, as an amateur and everything in between. And I do miss playing, but I love what I do now. I love going to the games. I love getting into a good match and trying to hopefully see what's happening. But, yeah, there's nothing like strapping the boots on and taping the shin pad to your forearm and getting stuck into a match.
Well, you are a Waterhead lad. You lived the dream. You play for your hometown team in Oldham. Got to play for Wigan when they were in the pomp in the 90s before developing your legendary status at Leeds Rhinos. Not a bad career.
Leeds was good for me. And it's one of those clubs, I think, Leeds. If a lot of rugby league fans are smart, and they can tell, they're not mugs, they can tell when a player's faking it, when a player gives everything, and Leeds, I think, was a really good fit for me at that time. I started at Oldham, I did 3 years at Oldham, I was ambitious and more ambitious than my hometown club, chose to go to Wigan, didn't get it right at Wigan, but the difference between Wigan and Leeds was, I think, that accessibility and that, you know, that you were still a role model as a Leeds Rhinos player, but you were very much encouraged to be part of that community, give autographs and be, you know, be somebody who's approachable, whereas Wigan players, when I played with the likes of Sean Edwards and Martin Afire and Kelvin Skerritt, and, you know, real top class, high-end sportsmen, and, you know, they took their craft very seriously.
You did start your career at Oldham, like you just said, in 1991. Do you remember much of your first game?
Yes, Sheffield away. I'd only recently come back from a Barla tour. It used to be the pathway was you played your amateur rugby up until being 17 or 18. Then you were in that Barla. I began with Lancashire and went on to Great Britain. We went on a tour to New Zealand where that was the first or one of the first occasions where I teamed up with Terry O'Connor, and we had Darren Fleary, David Bradbury, lots of players who went on to have stellar careers in the pro game. But I came back, signed for Oldham, and my first match was Sheffield away, which I very nearly lost it for Oldham, having had one of those moments and those rushes of blood that Mick Cook, who was my assistant coach at Leeds Rhinos later on in my career, never let me forget. So he was acting half. I was defending my goal line, sprinted off the line to put a shot on Hugh Waddell, and Mick Cook just picked it up, placed it over the try line, evened up the scores, and Mark Aston, who's the chief exec, coach, chief bottle washer and everything at Sheffield Eagles now, all he had to do was kick the goal, and fortunately for me, he missed, and it ended up being a draw. So I remember it like it was yesterday.
A lot's been mentioned about the Watershed in being a legendary stadium in rugby league. What was it like to play at?
Do you know, I'm hoping we can use a couple of colourful words. And Alex Gibbons, who was the kit man at Oldham, who'd begun as a player, coach, manager, and kit man as he was when I was there, used to say to me, Barry, it's a shithole. but it's our shit hole.
That's a fair description, that, to be honest, Barry.
It was, and I think the fact that, so I'm from Oldham, I live in Oldham, I've only spent maybe maximum of 12 months out of Oldham in total. So we live on a mountain, and it's cold, and it's wet, and it's grey, and it's miserable, but it's where we live, and we know as Oldhamers that people hate coming there, so we use that as something to our advantage. So I sort of got the message through Alex Givens that it was a fortress, and it was something that was very unpleasant for everyone else, but if we could make friends with the cold and the damp and the wet and the grey, then we could use it to our advantage. So I love playing at Sherrins, and obviously it was my first professional ground experience. I went there as a spectator, played there. It's sad now to see that it's obviously no longer there, but Oldham Rugby League hasn't really found that home and that spiritual home yet. I'd love to see them in the future make friends with the football club, and now that Scorsese's got Oldham Athletic, you know, hopefully the football team and the rugby league team can get back somewhere near where they used to be.
Barry, I just want to ask you about how your move to Wigan came about. You said that you made the option to sort of go. I just wondered how that sorted, really.
I'd had a really good year with Oldham. So in three seasons with the Oldham club, I probably, as pretty much my career went, I'd play four or five games, get a bit of momentum, and then I'd either pick up a knock, a bump, an injury, or a suspension, and then I'd lose that little bit of momentum. But during my last year, I put a run of games together. Peter Tunks, who was the coach, had got sacked. Bob Linder was player coach. Andy Goodway was player coach. And those two blokes, you know, I have to thank them, really, because they showed faith in me like Peter Tunks hadn't. And they said, look, you're in every week. Get yourself right. Don't worry about trying to impress us, because as we can see it, you're playing every game like it's the last game of rugby league you're ever going to play. So that's where the injuries and the suspensions and the trouble all came. So I sort of settled into my role, had a couple of good games, and people who'd been aware of my presence, you know, over the last two or three years had thought, he looks like he's settling down a bit. And I had quite a few teams. I went to see Saints had a big board of directors at the time. I went to Peter Higham. I went to his house, actually, at Warrington, the director at Warrington. Spoke to Widnes, spoke to Leeds. And I just felt that if I was going to leave my hometown club, because I only ever wanted to play for one club, and to sacrifice that and give that one club man tag up, it had to be for the best team. And Wigan was a phenomenal rugby league team with world-class athletes and world-class rugby league stars. So that was really, even though Wigan was the least amount of money that I was offered, it was the only option, really. It's something I'm incredibly proud of. I've always made the decisions in my life on and off the field on what I thought was right, not what was right for my bank balance. So I did a year at Wigan where I made a real mess of it. You know, I went from being a part-time rugby player, part-time builder with no time, no money, to being a full-time rugby player with a couple of quid in my pocket and just getting into all kinds of mischief off the field. And Wigan, which again I should thank them for, got rid of me after 12 months, because when I went to Leeds, I found my home and I found my place.
I was going to say, you did find your home at Leeds and ended up spending 10 years there.
10 years as a player, but also one of the things I really value and treasure and I'm incredibly proud of, 10 years after working in the corporate and commercial department while still keeping my fingers in, coaching what was then scholarship, coaching with the academy, coaching with the second team or reserves or under 23s. And I always loved spending time with players and looking at players on a one-on-one basis and trying to help them make a little bit of an improvement in the game. And then to become head of youth, which was a big job at the time when I got it. It was everything outside the first team and bringing players into the system like Callum, just briefly having a bit of involvement with Callum Watkins, but good involvements with Stevie Ward and good involvements with Ash Golding, Ash Hanley, Brad Singleton. So a lot of those players who are part and parcel and system trained and the Rhinos now. I've been part of the process, found them on a Sunday morning, integrated them into the club, told them what's expected and nursed them through that first period. So, yeah, loved my time at Leeds. And, I make no apologies when I'm doing my job as a Sky commentator. I'm very much straight down the line and I'm a rugby fan first and foremost, but the Rhinos is my spiritual home. I will always say I was born in Oldham, but I was made in Leeds, and I'm always going to be proud and always going to be grateful to that club.
Well, when we were looking at your stats for your career, Barry, we came across something that maybe not a lot of rugby fans will know about, and that's a short stint at Bramley.
Yeah, it was Graham Murray, and when Graham Murray first came, I picked up a suspect. There's a very common theme in my career, by the way, if you didn't know. I came up against, I think it was York in a pre-season friendly. In fact, I know it was. It was York, who were York Wasps, I think, at the time. And I picked up a 5-match ban, which at the time was spread over 8 weeks. So Gary, as he did while he was manipulating the system, had agreed with the RFL that I would register as a Bramley player, which was Leeds' dual red club at the time. I would see out the first 5 games as a Bramley player, play another 4 games as a Bramley player, and come back in the exact same time period. So I wouldn't be contributing to Leeds Rhinos, but I would get 4 games in and hopefully give Bramley a bit of boost on the gate receipts and stuff. So I will say this, though, it is 4 of the worst games of rugby league I've ever played. I was sulking, like I couldn't get my head round being at Headingley and not putting a blue and amber shirt on. I was wearing a Bramley shirt, so I would have to apologise to anybody concerned with Bramley, because not that I did cost any money, but they didn't get the money's worth when they paid to come through the turnstiles on those games.
What I find interesting is that really that was the first, if you like, dual registration thing, years before this current theme for dual reg, wasn't it?
Yeah, I didn't play much second team with the Rhinos. I played a little bit at the back end at Wigan, and I was sort of 50-50 at Oldham. So although I didn't play in the second team, I knew Paul Fletcher really well. Great fella who's still involved with Leeds Beckett, which was Leeds Met University. And he just sort of pulled me to one side and said, look, this is a route back to playing. This is a route to get some match fitness. This is the direction that the club's going in. And, Gary Etherington's got his knockers, and I disagreed with him at the back end of my Leeds career on the reserve grade and where we were going in terms of second teams. But I'll always give Gary Etherington this. He looks at game first rather than club first. And that was an option for him that he still believes in now. I personally don't agree, but he's sort of had that on his agenda, in his mind, since 1998, I think it was. So he's still... And you know the thing about Yorkshiremen, don't you? I'm a lanky lad, me, but I think my rose is a bit more pink than it is red. The Yorkies, once they make their mind up and once they think that something is right and they believe in it, then it's very rare you change their mind. So yeah, it was, to my knowledge, it was the first of its type, really.
You finished your playing career with Widnes. What was that like playing alongside your mate Terry O'Connor?
So the general answer to that would be great, and I loved it. Yeah. But the truth is, it was a nightmare being at the side of him, trying to get any ball at all, because anybody that played with him would know he wanted 2 carries in every set of 6. But no, it was fantastic. As everybody knows, we're great friends and been best friends for a long, long time. I think it's coming up for nearly 30 years now, which is a long time to be in somebody's back pocket. But I'd retired with Leeds in 06. My last professional game for Leeds was in the grand final. I was 33. I had terrible trouble with my shoulders and my elbows, which came to bite me on the backside, after I'd retired. But I'd retired as a Leeds player, was doing my stuff with the coaching and the corporate, and an opportunity came to do the rest of the season, because Ryan Tandy, who's no longer with him, no longer with us, rest in peace, had an injury. So Tez rung me up and said, you fancy playing last season, Steve McCormack, who I knew pretty well, had said to me that as long as I made one training session in the week, the last run, and was available for the game, then he'd give me the opportunity. So I sort of said, well, I would love to be part of the team that brings Widnes back up into Super League, having watched my best pal drag them out of Super League and get them relegated. So I wanted to have that on O'Connor for the rest of our lives. But great experience. Unfortunately, we couldn't get up at the end of that season. Hull KR beat us in the grand final at Warrington. But special place, special games. And, you know, for the two families, you know, we'd combine it with a getting together and a gathering of all our kids and wives and make a real weekend of it. But I do feel sorry, and my heart goes out to Widnes at the minute, and the, you know, the strife that they're having.
You've had a successful career on the field, Barry. Yeah, what's been the standout game for you, or what's been the biggest highlight?
It's always a difficult one, because I would put right up the Great Britain debut that I had at Wembley, when Jonathan Davis scored a magnificent length of the field try in the corner and we beat Australia.
I'll let you into a secret here, Barry. That's the first game that ever won me money.
Oh, do you know what? And I still look back on it, and it was an out-of-body experience for me, because I'd watched and been part as a spectator so many of those games there. And we had 12 men. Sean Edwards got sent off, and it meant that back in those days, a substitute got on and stayed on. And I was at a period in my career where I was starting all the time, didn't want to be on the bench, but I'd had a bit of a suspension, so I was just coming back off suspension. And Ellery had said, "Look, I'm gonna put you on after 20, and you're gonna stay on. And all I want you to do is do what you do best and get stuck into these Aussie forwards and make them feel it." And I loved it. So I'd put that right up there. But the best game in terms of rewards for me personally and my family was when Leeds Rhinos beat London Broncos in the Challenge Cup final in 99, because my son was the mascot. All my family went down. I come from a big Irish Catholic family, so there were thousands of them went down, watched the game. And I managed to score the match-winning try when we beat the London Broncos 54 points to 16.
And it's probably a length of the field effort now, is it?
It was a match-winning try. You didn't quite pick that up.
Yeah, I picked that up, Barry. I picked that up. Yeah. It was definitely a match winner, that, wasn't it? I just want to ask you as well, because for about 5 years, it was almost as if you ruled the rugby league world in front rowers, because looking back over your stats for between 99 and 2003, you was playing every week. The suspension seemed to have disappeared at this stage. You're playing in big games, like you mentioned at Wembley. You're helping Leeds get through to grand finals and semi-finals, and you're a regular both for Great Britain and Ireland as well. What was that like during that period of time?
Loved it, you know, as a front rower. And I came into the professional game at 19, and of course, you're full of passion and, you know, full of ambition. And the senior pros that were around me at the time would say, "Look, you'll not hit your straps until you're in your mid to late 20s. And, you know, I was like every brash young kid going, "Yeah, whatever, I'm here now and I'm going to rule the roost." And it's true, as a young front rower, I broke my body to bits, because I was just flinging myself into everything. But I would say between 26, 27... and 32, I felt in top form every game. I was ready. And people ask me now, you know, "Do you think you could still play in the modern game?" And of course I could, because I was a dedicated professional. I loved playing the sport, and I would have made it my purpose to fall within the rules of today's game. But I just don't think I would have enjoyed it, because there were so many aspects of the game when I played that were unseen, and those dark arts that we term them as, you know, they were the making and breaking of a lot of games. And if you could, as me as an individual, get over my opponent, and very often I would pick a number 8 or a number 10 or one of those bigger players and make my presence felt with them. And then the people around me, the Yestin Harrises and the Kevin Sinfields and the Danny Maguires, Rob Burrows, they could do their bit. And we'd get the goods, we'd get the win. So loved it. Look back, on those games and on my career with such fondness and such pride.
As a proud Lancashire lad, Barry, you must be really proud to have represented Lancashire and be the skipper. Was it 2002?
Yes, and lifting the War of the Roses trophy at Headingley was something really special. I was always a stand-in skipper, and the reason I was skipper on that day was I'd clashed heads with Paul Sculthorpe. Paul Sculthorpe had gone off, and so I was acting captain because I was the assistant. Ian Millward made me assistant captain, so I nearly always got to be a skipper by default. I probably had 30-40 games where I was a captain and Captain Ireland a few times. So to be a captain in a final, lift a trophy, representing Lancashire at Headingley was probably as good as it got for me as a captain. So, yeah, great times. I was always sorry that Scully was part of that process and he had to be knocked out even though we were on the same team. but, hey, them's the breaks, Scully.
Without a doubt, no mates on the field, is there? Do you think that's a concept that we should bring back?
I would love to see it back. I don't think we have enough high-intensity games. I believe that the fixture calendar is too crammed at the minute anyway.
Yeah.
The add-on games, I think it should be, let's play each other home and away, and then that's it then. And home and away being a manageable enough number, then there's room for maybe something else representative-wise. And you hear players talking about that fatigue. They're managed a lot better now. The recovery is more of a science than a fluke. So I would love to see something like that put into the calendar. I know that the academies and the youth have brought the Lancashire-Yorkshire concept back. I'd love to see Cumbria chucked in there. Then, you know, you could potentially look at a London or a Southern or, you know, something else that incorporates everybody else. So I think they're doing some good stuff with some of the juniors and giving those access to those high-intensity, high-quality games.
You've already spoken about your family, Barry, and your background. Is that what sort of got you thinking about representing Ireland? Because, I mean, you did get to represent them, didn't you? And like you said, captain them.
Captain them, coached them, and obviously played in a World Cup. So I looked at that, and at the time, the accusation now is players will play for Ireland because they can't get picked for the first choice, whether it's Australia, New Zealand or England. But I was a Great Britain international. I'd already represented England. And I made the decision because I wanted to make a difference. I wanted, of course, there's my family ties, and everybody will tell you the same thing. But my intention was at the time to be part of something from its very embryonic stage, to build it up from day dot. I was involved in the first game in 1996 in France. And I wanted to take it and see what potential it could grow towards. I think they've took two steps forward and one step back since 1996. And with a little bit of backing, a little bit of support, and people giving it the correct kudos, let's put it that way, the correct kudos, and choosing it because it's the right thing to do, rather than it's the only option available to them, I think that could take them forward. But I loved it, and we had some great players, playing with people like Tommy Martin and Chris Joynt, and of course, Tez O'Connor. We had a really good side in 2000. In 2008, when I was on the coaching staff, that was good, as good as any team in the World Cup. And myself and Andy Kelly, who were the coaches, we planned it to the absolute second to get through the group stage. And the only thing that let us down was when we got through the group stage, we were sort of at the mercy of the Australian organisers then, and we couldn't plan too much, and it all went a bit pear-shaped from that point on. We got hammered by Fiji in the quarters, but I'd love to see again a little bit in the similar way that Oldham is at the minute. We have so many little pockets of rugby league that's only really just the bare minimum is given to them in terms of asset and finance, of course, which is holding us back as a game from top to bottom.
Before I let you go, Barry, I just want to ask you one thing. You went on to work for Sky TV as a commentator doing the rugby league. What was it like working alongside Steve-O?
You know, he's a very misunderstood soul, is Steve-O, and I was determined not to like him because he'd slagged me off more times, you know. It wasn't till I sat at the side of him and realised he said that about everybody, and the reality was, I was bloody guilty when he was slagging me off. It was because I'd done something and whacked somebody and done something wrong. But lovely man, Steve-O, very passionate about the game of rugby league. It was probably the right time for him to move along. And I think my great promise to myself, and both Terry and I have got the same opinion, we will know when it's time to move on. We won't be an old man out of touch with a modern game, and we will know when it's right for us to move over and let somebody else have a go. But Steve-O was phenomenal at whipping up a game. And just to let you into a little bit of a secret, it's brilliant, and it's easy when you're doing Wigan versus Saints or Leeds versus Cass or one of those big games. It's really difficult when you're in an old stadium or a new stadium, in fact, with no fans and a game of real poor quality. That's when you earn your money, because you've got to convince the people at home that this is the best game of rugby league. This is a perfect example of the sweet science of rugby league, and you've got to convince them that their eyes are telling lies and it's actually a really good watch. So I thought he had that skill absolutely nailed, and I'm still trying to learn it because I'm so involved and invested in the game. If the game's not a good game, I'm as guilty as anybody else of rolling my eyes and tutting and thinking, well, this is a bit of a disappointment. But great man, Steve-O, and he helped us, Terry and I, as soon as we walked in, he helped us, give us loads of advice. And I couldn't speak highly enough of Steve-O. And of course, Eddie, who's still part of the broadcast now, they've always been really welcoming to us, and they obviously saw something in us that they could harness and cultivate and turn into something that 10 or 11 or 12 years later we're still working, we're still grafting.
Barry, we could talk to you all day, but we've got to let you go. Been fantastic to speak to you. You've had a great career, and we'll see you on the TV box close to wherever we are.
Not a problem. Thanks, Vimby. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you.
The Feel Better Station for Warrington Hospital.
This is Radio General.
The Final Hooter.